This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
This is Powering Through the Pandemic on BFM 89.9.
BFM 89.9, the business station. My name is Rich Bradbury. This, of course, is Powering Through the Pandemic here on Enterprise. On the phone line with me right now, I have the MD of Food Panda Malaysia. Sir, would you like to introduce yourself?
Sure. Thanks, Rich, for taking the time to have a chat with me. For those of you who don't know, my name is Sayantan, or Sai for short, and I've been leading the business here for Food Panda in Malaysia for more than 3 years now. I'm originally from India, but I'm proud to say that I can call Malaysia home now. I'm really, really glad to be on the show, and I hope everyone is keeping safe, staying healthy, and eating healthy, hopefully.
Of course, there are some difficult questions that have kind of been knocking around, some difficult subject matter as well. So there is a movement out in the US right now, and I'm sure you will have heard of it, this Delete Your Delivery Apps. And it's a direct response from vendors who've been using delivery apps for a while and never seem to have had a problem with them. But now small F&B outlets are kind of solely reliant on their delivery service, and a growing number are starting to close down because they still have expenses, of course, during the quote-unquote lockdown. For these outlets that feel as though some delivery apps are charging too much in their fees, what's your response to that?
Yeah, it's a great question, Rich. And so let me just try to address that. Of course, the market conditions between the US and Malaysia are significantly different. I mean, from the reports that we get out of the US, it seems like some of the fees that the delivery players charge over there are not only centered around the commissions or the service fees they charge, they're actually some other additional or supplementary fees that forms a critical part of the business relationship between the aggregators there and the restaurant. But having said that, we understand the concern. We haven't really seen that movement gaining any traction or momentum over here in Malaysia. I think primarily because, if you just conduct some research across markets, particularly within the Asia-Pacific region, we feel our commission rates are actually fairly they're clear, they're transparent. We don't have any hidden fees. That's all we charge. It's only commissions at the end of the day. So we don't charge any onboarding fees. Just to run you through the ecosystem. So when a restaurant comes onto our platform, they would actually need to be provided an ordering device. So this normally comes in the form of a mobile phone or a tablet. And we don't charge fees or we don't charge any costs. There's no cost associated to this. At the same time, we don't charge any or we don't pass on any delivery fees to our restaurant base or our vendors and or merchants. So it's really commission. So that's how we're very fair, transparent and clear, I would say. Having said that, we understand the pressures that everyone is under. But thankfully, as you said, delivery is proving to be critical for a lot of these smaller players, and we're doing all we can to understand what the difficulties are and, of course, address them as we move along.
Mm. I mean, you briefly touched on it, but I've had direct messages from outlets here in Malaysia that have practically begged me to order from them directly so that they can avoid this kind of middleman fee. I mean, does that concern you at all? Are you worried that it might become a trend? And if it did, how would you address it?
No, we're not actually worried about that. I think the delivery landscape in Malaysia is still very much on the growth maturity curve. So we haven't hit a level where we can say that the market is well and truly saturated as compared to maybe other parts of the world. So in those parts of the world, it might actually make sense where maybe 60 or 70% of your customers are actually already ordering online. It might make sense to actually establish your own delivery channel. Associated or connected points with that is having your own delivery service is actually very, very expensive. And this comes back to how we actually utilize our commissions. It's actually, a huge chunk of it, if not 100% of it, actually goes towards paying our riders who are now considered frontliners in these difficult circumstances. We welcome any restaurant or any merchant who is looking to supplement their sales via their own delivery channels. That's not a problem for us. But at the end of the day, I think we've been operating in this market for about 8 years. So we have a wide enough reach to actually really grow businesses, really grow on the delivery side of the business for a lot of the F&B players, regardless of how big or small you are. And that's a result of the significant number of customers that we've acquired over the years. So in the short run, given the challenging circumstances, this delivery channel might see some, or the independent delivery channels might see some growth. But I think from a mid to long-term perspective, aggregators would still provide a lot more value.
Have you simplified your onboarding process to enable like a quicker turnaround during the MCO?
Yes, we have. I mean, so we're trying to be as automated as possible. So back in the day, it's not like, just a few weeks ago, we were actually still operating within a very manual landscape, in the sense whenever a restaurant expressed interest to partner with us, we would actually have to call them. We would have to guide them through the Foodpanda operating system. But right now we've actually, two very important functions that we've released or features that we've released. One is restaurants now have the option to actually self-activate themselves on the platform. They no longer need to wait for a call from us. Basically once they have the device in hand, they're ready to go live, almost instantaneously. And the second thing is we also have a portal called, Vendor University, where restaurants can actually, refer to and also leverage of best practices in terms of how to grow their business and how to effectively manage their business on Foodpanda.
Right. That's what I was going to ask next is, like, you know, how are you helping your vendors? And are you reaching out to kind of micro SMEs or just focusing on your existing clients?
No, not really. I mean, we are quite a democratized platform, so we don't have preferences in terms of who joins Foodpanda. Of course, there's some quality control that needs to happen once you join Foodpanda or before you join Foodpanda. But honestly speaking, what we see in Malaysia and in some other of the other Southeast Asian markets that we operate in, demand patterns are heavily correlated to the width of the inventory that you have. So to simplify that, I mean, the more restaurants you have, the more customers will trust you and they'll order from you. So that's really sort of a key pillar of our business. We want to have deep a choice as possible. And what we've seen is, I mean, throughout the years, we've seen that consumer behavior has sort of shifted as well towards actually ordering from local champions, as we label them. So these are your, local stalls, your stalls that are in bazaars, so on and so forth. And so we really welcome these sort of SMEs and micro SMEs, as you pointed out. And honestly speaking, I think there's a lot of value add to have them on the platform, both for us and from their perspective.
One more question just before we take a break, Si. Can you share, or do you have an idea of a kind of percentage of new partners that have come on board since the beginning of the MCO?
Yeah, so we have actually increased acquisitions by around 100%. So just to give you maybe some sort of perspective. So, on a daily basis, we would be getting about hundreds of vendors in, and now we're looking at about thousands. So there is really keen interest on or with restaurants wanting to join us.
Okay, on that note, we'll take a short break. You are listening to Powering Through the Pandemic here on Enterprise on BFM. Of course, on the line with me, I have Sayantan Das. He's the MD of Foodpanda Malaysia. I'm going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes. BFM 89.9.
Being first matters. BFM 89.9.
BFM 89.9, the business station. This is Powering Through the Pandemic, and I'm Richard Bradbury. On the phone line with me right now, I have the MD of Foodpanda Malaysia. It is Sayantan Das. Thanks for taking the time, Sai, for joining us on the show today.
Absolute pleasure. Thank you for having me.
So earlier on, we were talking about the delete your delivery apps. We moved on about how you're helping vendors and the quicker turnaround and things. Now, of course, none of us have been through times like these before. Everybody's worried about their health, their employment, their savings, their jobs. For a lot of people who are trapped at home, food delivery services have become a lifeline to the food that they crave. Now we're all dealing with a heightened level of fear and uncertainty when it comes to things like sanitization. What levels are Foodpanda doing to address this issue, to allay people's fears?
Yeah, great question. I think particularly relevant during the times that we're operating in now, but also will be more and more relevant as we progress throughout the year and the years to come. I think there's two or three key things that we've actually rolled out to ensure that people can trust our services fully. And especially within the rider fleet that we operate, and we have close to 30,000 riders now nationwide. We're ensuring that we have stringent checks and balances in place to, of course, help contain the spread of the virus and at the same time provide or reassure the public that they're in safe hands. So some of these measures would include daily temperature checks. So riders are required to update our rider captains and our corporate logistics team with readings and recordings of their temperatures daily. For anyone who is above the normal body temperature, we ask and we request the rider to stay at home and go into sort of a self-quarantine mode until either the temperature resides or if it actually proves to be a serious case, then we ask the rider to get himself or herself checked up. The other key initiative that we've rolled out is, of course, contactless delivery. A lot of people may already be aware of this function or feature, but for those of your listeners who are not, so contactless delivery is basically a channel via which customers don't actually have to interact with the rider physically. The rider will be able to drop your meal at a designated drop-off point that can either be on your door handle or at the security guard counter in your condominium or wherever it is, wherever you feel comfortable with. All you need to do is just chat with the rider through our app. The contactless delivery feature is actually already already ticked in the app, so it's a de facto option. And so riders are aware that they will need to place the meals wherever the designated drop-off points are without interacting with the customer. On top of that, we've provided protective personal equipment to riders. So we've provided about 10,000 masks, gloves, and hand sanitizers. And they are required to sanitize their bags as well at intervals of every hour. So we're really trying to go above and beyond to ensure that we keep our rider fleet safe and as a result keep us our customers safe as well. And thankfully we don't have any suspected or positive cases within the fleet as of date.
Right. Okay, let's move on to something else that you recently announced as well. Of course, there's been this, for the longest time, people who are freelance drivers, workers, whatever, people were worried that they weren't going to be covered for anything. You recently announced SOSCO Protection Benefit. And how long had that kind of been in the planning stages? And why implement it now and not before?
Yeah, so it was actually in the planning stages for quite a while. I think about a year or so now. So it's not something that we decided to roll out overnight. The dynamics of the landscape is a bit different because our riders, as you correctly mentioned, are freelancers. And so SOSCO traditionally has been known to provide protection for full-time employees. And so we needed to sort of adjust the plans accordingly. We needed to tweak and tweak some of the conditions, adjust some of the constraints and limitations so that we could be fair with the riders and we could be fair with SOSCO as well. So it was actually a long time in planning. The fact that we rolled it out very recently is just pure coincidence. But then again, we also have other initiatives in place across the rider fleet to protect our riders. We already had an insurance scheme prior to this that was rolled out across the fleet. It's a very proud moment for me, especially to see that we're collaborating very, very strongly with SOSCO in terms of rolling this out.
How have the fleet responded to the SOSCO protection benefit?
Very positively. So I think, we're one of the first companies, if not the first sort of food delivery company to roll out such a scheme. Being a rider is, it comes with its own set of risks, regardless of where you are. So, the riders appreciate that there is at least this sort of safety net, that they can rely on. God forbid if something untoward happens. So the sentiment and the response has been very, very positive.
Okay, moving on to other services. I have a question here about, whether or not you're going to be planning any other services like other local competitors have. But before we get to that, let's talk about Ramadan. Of course, it's just around the corner. And yeah. we know that after deliberation, Ramadan bazaars will not be happening this year. Instead, we will for the first time be seeing online bazaars. And you guys recently announced a partnership with the Penang Halal International to launch a Ramadan e-bazaar in the state of Penang. Talk to us about some of the logistics of making that happen. And is it likely that we might be seeing a rollout in some of the other states too? And if not, why not?
Yeah, and so as you correctly mentioned, I think given the times that we're living in, it's probably not feasible for Ramadan bazaars to be centralized under one roof. So, of course, traditionally Ramadan bazaars would aggregate a lot of F&B, I guess, stalls and cafes and owners under one roof. So that is looking more and more like it's not going to happen. But, I mean, Ramadan is, of course, a very important time for a lot of people who are celebrating and observing Ramadan. So we, as you labeled again, we have come up with an initiative to roll out what we label as an online bazaar or digital bazaar. And yes, we recently formed a collaboration with PHI. That's not the only collaboration that we have in terms of the Ramadan bazaar or online bazaar that we're planning to launch. We've also entered into partnerships with Perak as well for their Smart Iftar campaign. Or initiative, which is somewhat similar. So the logistics to make this happen, given that we're a digital company, given that we're fully immersed into technology, for us, I mean, the pain point that we wanted to address is how do we connect all, let's say, these bazaar stalls, how do we connect them and then present them on the Foodpanda app or website so that it's a seamless customer experience. And so what we've done or what we rolled out is basically a survey, an internal survey that we rolled out to our restaurant base to see who would actually be interested in partaking in this online bazaar initiative. And we had to also then identify where they're located. A lot of these stalls or stall owners, of course, operating remotely from home. And so they don't have a physical establishment where they can operate from. So we had to identify if their locations were actually within the coverage areas that we have. And provided that the locations are within the coverage areas, then we would onboard them onto our platform within a Ramadan bazaar swim lane, as we call it. So that would be sort of the first lane that you see when you jump onto the app or website. And that's how we basically aggregated them to give this feeling that there is sort of an online bazaar that's taking place. And very simply, I mean, that's what we did.
Okay, I've got two final questions, which I think we can probably roll into one. Once the MCO is lifted, what changes in business practices that you've adopted during the MCO do you think you'll be holding on to? Which will you discard? And then after the MCO, what are the future plans for Foodpanda?
Yeah, so again, a very pertinent question. I think some of the business practices, as you're probably also observing as well, is sort of working from home at scale. And so a lot of our employees, especially within the corporate office, they are working from home. Some of them have faced challenges in terms of connectivity. But some of what we've noticed is actually a huge majority of our workforce is actually now more efficient as compared to working from a physical establishment or in the office.
Yeah.
And so I think this is a really, really good sign, because I think one of the concerns that corporates had or startups had in the past was if we would have allowed our workers to work from home, then potentially we might have been inefficient.
Right.
But that is absolutely not the case. But on the flip side of that, we're now trying to solve the issue of how people don't burn out while working from home, because that can become a real issue.
Yeah.
But definitely moving forward, I think we are looking at sort of initiating a scheme or an initiative where more and more of our colleagues can work from home, given that they have the right, the access to the right tools. On top of that, of course, I don't think that we will return to an absolute normal state, even after the MCO is lifted. I think life will still be very different in the subsequent 2 to 3 months after the MCO is lifted. So we will still be adhering to the practices and principles that we have in terms of making sure that we have split work arrangements, even if we are allowed back at the office, so on and so forth. So that's from a workforce perspective. I mean, at the same time, also trying to look at ways in terms of how we can optimize our deliveries even further. So how we can make sure that the health guidelines that we have enforced across the fleet, how could they can be adhered to even after the MCO is listed.
Zayan Tan, thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you so much, Rich. Pleasure to be here, and I hope everyone is staying safe.
You stay safe.
Thank you so much.
You have been listening to Powering Through the Pandemic here on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Powering Through the Pandemic on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.